lip syncing too. Wait, okay, I tell you what. Next time Greg is in, we are doing the Facebook Live thing. And we're going to demonstrate how Mike's music gets us going.
All right, good. That completely works. I love it.
Okay, we're back with Greg Peterson, Urban Farm, Kari Spencer, Micro Farm
Project.
Thank you, Micro Farm Project.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about fermenting. Just want to clarify a few things. There is safety things to consider.
That's correct. And it's not just about safety, but also about flavor. You want to attract the lactobacillus organism and not molds and other yeasty things that aren't good that will ruin your pickle. So the main thing to prevent that is just to make sure that everything's clean and sterile. So if you have a pickling recipe, it's probably going to tell you how to do that. And you want to follow the directions for making those fermented pickles exactly. And, you know, occasionally it goes wrong, even for the best of us, and that's okay. If you notice that it's getting moldy or something, that's fine. Just start over. Yeah. Do something else.
Yeah, it's like everything. You have to do it some to know. And so the big difference then when you're making pickles, you're going to make the recipe and you're going to water bathe it if you want to preserve it. If you're fermenting something, that is the preservation. And if you do water bathe it or pressure cook it, you're going to kill what you've just worked so hard to create.
That's correct. Our ancestors used fermenting so that they could preserve foods without any refrigeration. And so there was no canning back in the old days. And so if you ferment, you do not want to water bath or pressure can your goods because then you kill all those good probiotics. And they will stay on the shelf without any need for canning them.
Okay. So we've got the fermenting. Mm-hmm. We've got the canning. So what's next?
Dehydrating. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's so simple, and it takes something and reduces it by 30 to 80%.
Size wise,
yeah.
So you can store it. Doesn't take so much room to store.
Easily stored, and right now we're getting ready to do apple chips for the next year. In fact, I just last month ate my supply of apple chips from last year.
Oh, yeah? So and you were just keeping those bagged on your shelf?
I actually stick them in the freezer.
Do you? Okay, yeah, and just pull out the bags.
Bag them, okay. Yeah, and store them in the freezer. We're going to talk about freezing the next segment.
Okay, well, let's talk through the different ways that you would dehydrate. I've tried a couple of different ways. I haven't had a ton of success, so tell me how you do it.
Well, really, dehydrating is dehydrating. It's the different kind of dehydrators that you can use.
Mm-hmm. You can buy an electric dehydrator, and there are some that force air horizontally and some that force it up from the bottom. Mm-hmm. And, you could pick one of these up online. You could pick one up probably even at a thrift store if you just wanted to give a shot and see how it worked.
Yeah.
And so an electric dehydrator is really handy to dehydrate things really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And they just use air. They just blow air over the food and keep it at a nice low temperature because one of the points of dehydrating is you don't want to heat it up and cook it. You just want to dry it out.
Right.
But that being said, you can dehydrate in the oven. Just make sure that you're at the lowest temperature possible in your oven and keep an eye on it.
Put a sticker on there so nobody comes by and bumps it for broiling or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the big problem with ovens is that, generally what 170 is the low temperature.
That's right. And you really need to be 140.
Yeah.
So not the best option.
Not the best option.
But, we live in a desert here in Phoenix. And I was just spending some time with a friend of mine yesterday. She's Lebanese and her mom makes grapes. And she said she just puts a ladder between two chairs and puts some trays on it, puts all of the grapes out there and covers them with tulle netting and just lets them dry outside in the sun. No power, no equipment needed.
Nice.
And, we really can do that here. A lot of things I don't use the dehydrator for, herbs and things that dry relatively quickly, I just lay them out on a tray and let them go, and they dry within a few days.
Let them go in your house? You had said in
the house, or if I'm going to do it outside, I'll do it in a shady spot with some tulle netting covering so that the flies don't land on them.
Yeah,
and that works really well, too.
Yeah.
So you've dried them out. Is there any other things we've missed here?
Apple chips. So there's the apple chips. Okay. Apricots. Love. Especially the apricots that grow here. The little Katie and gold-kissed apricots. They are so incredibly prolific. One of my neighbors has an apricot tree in her front yard, and she probably gets 100 pounds of apricots off of it. So I, you know, I got 50 pounds from her and dehydrated them. I froze some. I'm going to make jam out of them, and then I'll can them. So apricots are great. Tomatoes. What can you do with tomatoes?
Well, you can make tomato chips. You can make dried tomatoes that you can throw in soups and sauces and other recipes.
Oh, yeah.
Or you could make your own sun-dried tomatoes, and after you dry them out, pop them in some olive oil with just a little bit of, you know, like a tablespoon of vinegar, and you've got your own sun-dried tomatoes. You don't have to spend, you know, the big bucks at
they
the grocery
are
store for them.
So are you talking about taking a whole tomato?
You can take a tomato. You can slice it up.
Slice it.
Or even just slice it in half. Dehydrate it. And when it's just almost crispy, put it in some oil in a jar with some herbs and spices if you want. And you've got your own.
That's the million-dollar tip of the morning. Because do you know how much those jars are? I love them.
Oh, I know.
But it's like $4 for a little bitty jar. Yeah. What is that, like 8 ounces maybe?
Oh, yeah. not even 8 ounces.
I've got a jar here, huge jar.
Those are beautiful.
Of tomatoes that I made. This is worth its weight in gold right there.
Yeah. Well, in tomatoes, they you know, there's so much water in them.
Right.
They dehydrate down to almost nothing. Yeah. And so it's a great, great way to store things.
I am so excited. So what else we got? We've got, kale chips.
Oh, my gosh. So
everybody hates kale, I hate to tell you. We have a guy at the office who just has, Mr. Stan, he's got a green thumb, and he grows mountains of kale and brings them in. And I'm about the only one that'll eat it.
Right.
But he brings in these huge things. But I've tried some different things. What do you do with it?
Well, one of the things that I love doing with it is I actually dehydrate it down and not into chips but into a powder. And then we put it in soups, and we put it in green drinks, and so when you do it that way, you're not getting a whole lot of taste. You're just getting the nutrients from it. And the other thing about dehydrating is if you dehydrate them at a low enough temperature, you're still getting some of the enzymes, and you know you're still getting some of the good stuff from it on top of the nutrients in it.
Right, all the minerals that are in it. And my kids don't really care for kale salad very much, but if I make kale chips, they don't even get in the jar before they get eaten because they're so light and crispy, and you can put garlic or just sea salt or whatever you want on them, and they just taste
so you wash up your kale and then dry it real good, or you just throw it out there?
Oh, no, I will cut it into pieces, like 2-inch pieces, make chips, you know, and then just put it in the dehydrator and dry it out. And
do you cut that
delicious.
Spine out?
Oh, yes.
Just the leafy part. Yes.
In fact, the really cool thing about kale is if you do it right, you can actually, in one fell swoop, you grab the kale leaf and strip off the spine.
Well, there you go.
You know, you just kind of start tearing up toward the top of it and just pulling the center spines out.
Well, I really like the idea of drying it and then pulverizing it to death.
Oh, yeah.
And then sneaking it in things. I think I could get my family to eat it that way.
Well, there's something that grows really well here called tree kale. Mm-mm. It's an amazing plant, and the leaves are bigger than dinner plate, but it puts off these massive leaves, but it's chewier than kale. You know how
Do you know that may be what Stan has, because it is huge leaves, and it's tough.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Mm-hmm. So I sent a bunch of that to a friend of mine up in Cottonwood recently, and she actually made kale chips out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And see, something like that would make great kale chips because it is a beefier, leaf. When we try and do kale chips out of, you know, like the standard kale in our yard, it's not beefy enough and it falls apart.
Right.
That's why I go to the powder.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. We're gonna get you healthy this morning, teaching how to get all that good stuff into your system. Right? Hey, I wanted to talk just a minute. You guys both have things going on. Car, you're getting ready to publish a book?
Yes, I am, with 5M Publishing. It'll be coming out this fall. It's called City Farming, How to Grow Food and Raise Livestock in Urban Spaces.
Well, if anybody knows, you do.
That is the case.
Yeah, and I'm getting really excited about it. Yeah. So you can go out to cityfarmingbook.com and kind of keep up on the book. And there's already some information posted there for people who are interested in that topic. And we'll let you know when it comes out. Looking like October, November, probably.
Nice.
Have you finished writing it? You're just waiting for the publishing process?
We're doing all the last minutes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Since you never end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Editing
yeah.
And all
so
that.
We'll be doing a book signing in the fall with it. And
keep us posted.
Locally.
We'll let everybody know.
Yeah.
I'll be first in line.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
And Greg, you are an educator by heart. Do you ever feel like you're a teacher? I mean, you must.
Well, yeah.
That's what you love to do. You'd love to share this information.
Yeah, I've taught at ASU and I teach in the neighborhoods, and anybody that'll listen, I'll talk to them about growing your own food, because I believe that the most important thing that we can be doing on the planet right now is learning how to grow our own food.
Mm-hmm. And so, speaking of anybody who will listen, you have a lot of people listening. Where can people find your information?
Yeah, urbanfarmpodcast.org is my podcast. And we launched it a year and a half ago, and we're getting about 1,500 listens a day it right around
That's
the world.
Huge.
And just under 50,000 listens a month. So, you know, people are really, really excited about rediscovering, let's say that, rediscovering where their food comes from and how to grow it ourselves.
I know we act like it's all new, but we're just kind of waking up, right?
Exactly.
We're coming back out of the packaged food age. We thought that was so cool and so easy, and now we're realizing, hey, that's really not very healthy, so we need to get back to this
basics. You know what they call that stuff? They call it foodstuffs.
Foodstuffs?
Yeah, and when you Google foodstuffs, it's basically it says a food-like product.
Food-like.
Food-like product, yeah.
Like being the key word.
Right, and so, you know, you don't know what's in it, and
lots of consequences to that stuff, and preservatives and chemicals to keep it.
Yeah, one food-like product that my kids went through a lot of before I woke up was fruit by the foot. You know that the fruit stuff with the roll-ups. You know,
and you know how to make. When we come back, we're going to talk about the fruit leather.
Yeah.
Okay.